Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The film, See How They Run, The Farewell to Jean-Luc Godard. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
It's a week.
It's a week. Okay, fair enough. Well, it's been a sad week for us people who love movies because the great Jean-Luc Godard has died. But I do want to talk about one movie that is opening this week briefly, and then we'll get to Jean-Luc. A movie called See How They Run, just because it is opening and it's getting a lot of buzz. And it's not a bad movie, although I found it quite forgettable, actually, even though it's pleasant to watch while it's on the screen. See How They Run was directed by Tom George, and it is a comedy, and it is a comedy that is very much about show business. It deals with the legendary stage play, The Mousetrap, written by the late great mystery writer, Agatha Christie, which has, as of now, been playing in London for almost 30,000 performances. It's the longest running show, I suppose, in the history of the entire cosmos. And what this movie does is it goes way back to the 1950s when it was new. And in fact, people involved with The Mousetrap are celebrating the 100th performance. Oh, they're mere children in Mousetrap history. And this is, of course, a fictional film, but it does peg itself on that real life circumstance. And what we have here are various people involved with The Mousetrap, including Richard Attenborough, who starred in the original first run of The Mousetrap and was, of course, himself a very great actor and also a filmmaker, and his wife, Sheila Sim, and they're having this big celebration, and other people are there, too. And one of the people who shows up at the celebration is an American, a Hollywood director, played by Adrian Brody, and he wants to make a movie adaptation of The Mousetrap. Now, in real life, that never happened. And in the movie, we kind of figure out why that never happened, even though the movie is fictional. Again, it intersects with real life events. And so we have various fictional characters, various real life characters interacting with one another in this murder mystery, because what happens is that the American producer is killed. And so we have this mystery play, The Mousetrap, and we have people involved in this play while it's actually running in London, involved now with a real life mystery of a Hollywood movie director who has come to visit them about making a movie out of their play. So that may sound a little bit confusing. The movie is not at all confusing. It's also, as I said, it's pleasant, it's fun to watch, but I just found it very unmemorable. It's been a few days since I've seen it, and I already am having trouble remembering the details of it. One thing that is sort of amusing about it, if you're involved, interested in the stage and the screen, are, again, a whole lot of these intersections with real life. For example, one of the main characters is a police officer, played, by the way, very nicely by Sam Rockwell, named Inspector Stoppard. Well, of course, Tom Stoppard is the name of a very famous and great playwright. Another character who is played by Saoirse Ronan is named Constable Stalker. And she is, in fact, something. She's a very nice woman. She's very low-key, but she is something of a stalker. She does not give up easily. So we have these sort of little jokey names and jokey references to real-life people. They don't always work. For example, the actor who plays Richard Attenborough doesn't have the slightest resemblance, either in voice or facial features, to the real Richard Attenborough, who I've met. I think that's rather strange. They could have chosen somebody who was a little bit more of a dead ringer for Richard Attenborough. But again, the movie is perfectly pleasant and it's fun. So if you're interested in Agatha Christie, the movie is certainly not about her, but she does play an indirect role in the whole thing. If you're interested in the stage, the theater, if you're interested in sort of self-reflexive movies that kind of deal with movie making and show business, then you'll have a good time watching this movie. And it certainly does have a very nice cast with people like Adrian Brody and Sam Rockwell and various others. I want to mention also David Oyelowo, who is very, very good in the film. So it's a fun movie, an unmemorable movie. I think that a lot of people are enjoying it. I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but by the time the lights were going up at the end, I had already sort of started to forget it, so that's not the highest recommendation I can give. I do want to give the highest possible recommendation to Jean-Luc Godard, who died this past week at the age of 91, a truly remarkable and astonishing figure in the history of film. And I just want to take a moment here to pay tribute to him, to his memory, and to call attention to his work for people who are not familiar with it. One of the things that I've been amused by in the few days since he died is all of the critics who are gushing all over him. He was one of the greatest figures we have lost, one of the legendary luminous figures in the history of cinema, which is all true, but a lot of these people, I'm sure, have not looked at a Godard film for the past 20 or 30 years, because his films are challenging, they are difficult, you have to really put in incredibly active thought while you watch them, but they have also been hugely influential, and he was just a screen artist, and that's sort of with a capital A, or because he was Swiss and French, an artiste of the very highest order. He took the cinema enormously seriously, and he created an astonishing body of work, way, way over 100 shorts, features, video works, a huge number of works, as well as acting in a number of his own movies, et cetera, a really extraordinary body of work, and again, a tremendous influence on movies. Now, his greatest period was a long time ago, even though he just died, and he was working long into his 80s. Until just a few years ago, he was actively working. His greatest work was done way back in the 1960s. He was a member of the French group known as the New Wave, the French New Wave. They started as movie critics back in the 1950s. He very much started as a movie critic, and then they started making short films, and then they started making feature films. And Godard followed exactly that trajectory, as did most of his New Wave colleagues. He made his first feature back in 1960, and it remains probably his best known and probably his most popular film that he ever did, a movie known in English as Breathless, way back in 1960, and it's a really unusual movie with all kinds of unusual things about it, both in the movie itself and in the way it was made. It stars Jean-Paul Belmondo as a small-time criminal, and Jean Seberg, the American actress, as his American girlfriend, and they're in Paris, and he is hanging around. The police are after him. The police have set up a dragnet for him because he's a petty crook, but he can't leave town until he's gotten a hold of some money that some other crook has that belongs to him. So he's hanging around at his girlfriend's apartment, waiting for this money to show up. And what the two of these do, these two characters, the crook and his girlfriend, they just sort of hang out. They talk, they kiss, they discuss this and that. She goes out and picks up a few items. He sort of hangs around the apartment on his own for a little while. Really not much happens in this movie. And then at the very end of the movie, this is a little bit of a spoiler, but it's a famous ending, she turns him into the cops for no reason that anybody, including her, can figure out, and the cops come and kill him. So that's what Breathless is about. What's unusual about it is the whole ambiance, the whole feeling, the whole mood of the film, which has a lot of scenes where just nothing much is happening. It's just a couple of people hanging out, but also the way the film was shot. It was shot in the streets, the stores, the shops, the cafes, the apartments of Paris. Dialogue was made up on the spot. By Godard, the movie was shot silent, and he would call out dialogue to the actors or call out instructions to the actors while the camera rolled, and then the voices were dubbed in later on. And the editing of the movie is just as improvisational as that. The movie jumps from one thing to another. Sometimes there will be a couple of people just talking to each other, and there will be five cuts from one shot to another, just slight differences between the cuts, one to another, bum, 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 for no apparent reason except the rhythm of it. The movie is incredibly musical. Sometimes it has a fast rhythm, sometimes it has a slow rhythm, and sometimes that rhythm is created through editing that has no purpose except to create a rhythm. All of this is really unusual, and it creates these sort of volatile moods, quicksilver moods, that change from one moment to another. anyway. It's a movie that has to be seen to really be understood. And it was, as I said, hugely influential. And if you've ever seen American movies of the 60s, like The Pawnbroker from Sidney Lumet or Bonnie and Clyde, these movies were hugely influenced by Godard's work of the 60s in general and by Breathless in particular. Hugely influential. So he made a lot of other movies besides that. And again, his movies of the 1960s remain his most popular and his most influential. I said most popular. Most of them were seen by very few people and did not turn a profit, but they got into movie theaters and he became an enormously famous figure, even though his movies were really for people who really love cinema rather than people who are just looking for a good Saturday night entertainment. Some of his most legendary films include a movie called Contempt, starring Brigitte Bardot and Jack Palance, and the real-life director Fritz Lang playing himself. It's an astonishing film. That is just one of my favorite movies of all time. It's just absolutely amazing. A movie called What My Life to Live, which starred Godard's wife at the time, Anna Karina, playing a prostitute. Alphaville, a science fiction movie. Masculine Feminine, a movie about youth. A Woman is a Woman, a musical. And what Godard was doing in a lot of these films of the 1960s was taking very familiar genres. For example, the gangster film in Breathless, the musical in A Woman is a Woman. Alphaville, which was a science fiction film, and sort of taking these genres and turning them inside out and shaking them and taking them apart and then putting them together in an entirely new way that nobody had ever tried before. And again, these movies were not all that popular with regular audiences, but they were hugely influential. A movie of his I want to mention called Weekend, which I think is one of his very greatest. I have called this the angriest film ever made because it's when Godard was getting so disillusioned with capitalism that he decided he was not going to participate in the capitalist system anymore. And he then teamed up with another filmmaker from France, and they started a group called the Zsiga Vertov Group, named after a legendary figure in early Soviet cinema, and they made movies so radical, not only politically, but also aesthetically, that they knew these movies, they didn't want these movies to be shown in movie theaters. They wanted these movies to be only for people who wanted to reject capitalism and conventional society as much as Godard did. And so they made quite a number of films like this. One of them starred the Rolling Stones. It's called One Plus One. And it was about the making of the great Rolling Stones song Sympathy for the Devil, but alternating with Marxist propaganda sketches. Another movie called Tout va bien, about a strike, starred Jane Fonda, but it was all about labor and the conflict between labor and capitalism and so forth. So these movies were not only seen by very few people, they were meant to be seen by very few people. They were meant to be radical critiques of the capitalist system, so radical that you couldn't even sell tickets to them because that would be too capitalistic. Well, Godard had a terrible motorcycle accident in 1971. He recovered with the help of another filmmaker named Anne-Marie Mieville, who then became his personal and professional partner for the rest of his life. And they, together, the two of them, started to make works that Godard said he was returning to regular filmmaking again. He was going to come back and make movies that were just ordinary movies that people could come and see. But they were still very, very radical. Radical in their artistry, radical in their whole approach to cinema, and again, in their ongoing critique of capitalism and of what he regarded as the extraordinary materialism of life in Western civilization. He was very much an anti-materialist. He loved nature. And even though he made movies, which are very materialistic objects, they're made by filming real things with real equipment, he kept going with his radical critique of capitalism and materialism. Back in the middle 80s, he and Mieville made a movie called Hail Mary, which was a movie about the Virgin Mary, a modern-day story of the Virgin Mary and the birth of Jesus, which became hugely controversial because it was about a very religious subject, and some people regarded it as being sacrilegious. I think that Godard meant it as a sincerely religious film, and I think it's one of his very greatest films. But after that, he sort of sank into obscurity, even though, amazingly, he got to keep on making movies. I asked him about that when I did an interview with him years ago. And one of the things he said was that he still had a name. and he could still get French movie companies to put a little bit of money into some sort of a project that he would make on a very low budget, just because they liked being associated with his famous name. And so he kept right on making movies which were always genre bending and which did all kinds of bizarre things, but did keep his name alive in cinema in a small way. I want to mention that back in the early 90s, Quentin Tarantino named his production company A Band Apart because of one of Godard's movies from the 60s called Band Apart, translated as Band of Outsiders. So Godard also had a very powerful influence, even on somebody as popular in American cinema as Quentin Tarantino. I wrote a book on Godard some years ago called The Films of Jean-Luc Godard. I edited a book of interviews with Godard some years ago called Jean-Luc Godard Interviewed. I've interviewed him. I've just been involved with his films in all kinds of ways over the years, and I just commend adventurous moviegoers. If you're not an adventurous moviegoer, stay away from Godard. His movies are too difficult, too challenging, too unusual. But if you are adventurous, start with some of the great films from the 1960s, especially Breathless. They're easily available, and you will have an experience at the movies or in front of your DVD player like you have never had before. So adieu, Jean-Luc Godard. You were one of the greatest ever, and I hope that you are still making movies in that other world. And that is my somewhat mournful story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the film See How They Run, and adieu, Jean-Luc Godard.